With traffic, errands, and parking, cars can be a chore.
But a great car can be an adventure, a getaway, and a prized possession.
Whatever your budget or family require, there's a car out there you'll love. We're here to help you find it. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
One of the odd things about this podcast for me, but it's also kind of great, is it is a weird combination of therapy and confession.
It's cathartic for both of us.
It really is.
Yeah, especially the stuff before the microphone starts recording.
Anyway. Well, that's a whole separate thing. But when we do actually sit down and share with you guys, we get to fully fledged embrace the fact that we have this car disease. Mm-hmm. Talk about the ups and downs of that reality. And I'm in a downswing right now, I have to say.
Yeah, I know. Todd needs some encouragement right now, everyone. He's got a car story to share with you. But before we do, I do want to tell you about this Saturday, season 6, episode 2, is Pickup Trucks in Atlanta.
In Atlanta.
Something we haven't really touched on before. You've asked us to drive pickup trucks, and we drove, indeed, the full-size guys. So this is the F-150, the new GMC Sierra, and the brand new Ram 1500. So all three of those. We didn't do any towing or hauling or pulling or transporting of anything.
Because, look, nobody
We just drove them in traffic.
Nobody does truck tests the way people drive trucks. I mean, look, I do realize there are plenty of you in construction. You drive trucks for real and you have a pickup and you tow. And I know that exists. But I also grew up in Texas. And I've been to the South more than once, okay? And there's plenty of pickup trucks that are sitting in traffic, doing nothing but sitting in traffic, or the drive-through, or I need to go back to Starbucks and I'm going to sit in traffic again. That happens a ton. So we thought, let's do that. Let's do how people use truck in the way they weren't intended. Let's use trucks in the way that people use cars and talk about them in that regard. And that's what we did.
Yep. All right. So these sponsors that are helping us bring television to you guys are Covercraft. They are our title sponsor for the entire TV season 6. And thanks to them. Also, Griot's Garage is our official car care sponsor.
Their stuff
and
is awesome.
And brand new is Hagerty Insurance is with us for the all of 2020. Mm-hmm. So thanks to them. We're excited to start bringing you a lot of giveaways and a lot of more information about our sponsors. I just want you to know, along with Auto Tempest, these are our sponsors, and we really, really appreciate it. It helps us create the content to bring to you guys.
It's the reason we can create the content, and you guys are great in the way you respond, not only to us, but also to these sponsors. Thank you for that as well.
A quick note about merchandise. You can still get the host jackets on the Amazon store. So go to everydaydriver.com. Right in the middle, you can see the store tab. Mm-hmm. That takes you to the Amazon page where there's merchandise available. And the Phaeton and the Pickle Fork t-shirts are still available. Those will remain, but the host jackets are just going to be through January 2020. So, you know, since it's winter and cold, we figured we
since
could
you might currently need a jacket. Yeah, that'd be good.
When it's cold rather than, like, you know, June.
We thought of it in May last year and went, that's a little too late.
Exactly.
Also, while you're on the website, the dates for the pilgrimage trip to Germany are at least posted. A lot of the details aren't there yet, but just so you're aware, the dates are there. If you're thinking about it, these are August dates this year. A little bit different trip because we're actually going to do the tracks in reverse order. I don't even think the website's been updated to that yet, but we're doing the tracks in reverse order this year, which means we'll be doing Spa first, Ring second.
Mm-hmm.
Depending upon the day you catch me, depends on how I feel about which order it should be done. I think either one works
We've done both ways.
Yeah, it's great.
Either way.
It's great.
And
so that is coming.
It's got pros and cons.
So. Totally. It is coming in early August, and so you can look at those dates. We will be posting stuff for registration of that probably fairly soon because it's going to be obviously earlier this year. We're very excited about that trip. We're also going to Iberia. I want to actually, you know, while I'm here at Iberia, really quickly – while I'm here at Iberia, who was the person that asked? No. Driven by Gas said on Instagram, are we planning on doing a meetup for our Spanish fans while on the Iberia trip? Where the heck are you is my question. Because, you know, Spain is also not tiny. We will be roughly in Ronda, Seville. Those are the primary cities we'll be in for Spain. So depending upon where you are.
Southern Spain, very far south.
The reality is it's probably better for you to come to us, but I don't know where you are. So these are my questions. I mean, it would be cool to see people that actually follow the show that are in Spain and Portugal. It'd be amazing. But I'm not counting on that, but it's cool that you asked.
Well, it hadn't occurred to me because, you know, we're doing some reconnaissance as well for the trip, future trips for the Iberian Peninsula trip. And so if you are in Spain, please reach out to us. Send us an email or any kind of social media signal, whatever that you
You're looking for a Spanish fixer, aren't you?
And
we have Tom for a German fixer on Pilgrimage.
Yeah, we kind of do. So if you you are and you want to take a road trip down and see us, we'd love to see you. So, all right. So we're telling a little bit of a story here that I want you guys to hear. Todd's needing some encouragement here. So I want you to tell the story and then just put it out there to the audience.
I don't know that it's encouragement. It's just real life.
It is,
you know?
But we're here to encourage you anyway.
Because here's the thing that's going on. I realize that I have had a string of cars of late, and I've realized it's also all been my winter cars. A string of cars that make me nervous. And that has nothing to do with how much I like them. I've liked them all.
Sure.
But the $5,000, 180,000 mile Mini, I couldn't believe it ran as well as it did.
Was there a level of anxiety with that car?
Yes, because I kept going, it's a little too good to be true. I kept wondering what was the thing that was just going to suddenly spiral out of control because it was a $5,000 Mini Cooper.
And it's probably still going strong.
And I'm sure to spite me, it is still running very well. Eric, you have to let me know. But anyway, all of that. So the Mini gave me a little bit of that. Then I bought the Lancer, and that feeling continued. Now we've bought these big sedans. And while we are both genuinely enjoying these big sedans, and we've got a really good TV episode coming with those and with new sedans, we've also got a YouTube piece coming that compares just those old sedans. Lots of content coming on those.
Yeah, for sure.
We're both genuinely enjoying driving them. They are a situation of constant anxiety because is something going to break? And then the thing beyond it, and how much is that going to cost?
Yeah, money factors in, absolutely.
This is simultaneously the horror and the fun. I mean, I'm aware of this. In the midst of this,
on a day-to-day basis, one is
totally
more on the scale than the other.
Yes.
They're never equal.
In the midst of this, there's the Lancer, which I had kind of parked to the side for the winter because I just thought, all right, I'm going to let it sit for a while. And when I get the Phaeton up to where I feel confident about it, which is about where I am now. I mean, confident is relative. Then I'll probably sell the Lancer.
Right.
Maybe get my wife a Jeep, all this kind of stuff.
Right, right.
While going down the highway, as you may have heard, the Lancer had an engine problem. It has now been diagnosed, and the diagnosis is not good. It needs an engine.
Yeesh.
It needs an engine. So as you may have heard me mention on the podcast prior, and actually, Matt, thank you, man, you reached out on it. I had the wild, I'm a crazy car person thought, which is, I should put an Evo engine in this.
Right.
Because the truth is, you can actually get an Evo engine for about the same money as an old Rally Art engine, so why the heck would
which
you do that?
Makes all kinds of sense. But
why wouldn't you just put an Evo engine in?
Absolutely.
But let's be honest, once that would be a build project, something would be unexpected. Something would go awry, and it would cost more.
Sure.
So the bottom end of this project is probably around $5,000. And truthfully, I just can't stomach spending that money on the Lancer. So
I hear you.
I have a car I'm going to scrap, which I've never done. I have a car that has and this was just the way we did it at the time, and I'm just being fully candid here. I have a car that we had a tiny little loan on when we got it, just because that made the most financial sense the time we did it. Of course, now that's looking pretty boneheaded because, the car is essentially in need of a heart transplant, and I don't intend to do it because I'm a guy that obviously you've heard this podcast more than once. I'm a guy that loves cars. I have no time or skill or patience or money to work on things that are broken.
Time is the biggest
thing. Absolutely.
And 2020 is already shaping up to be a huge year for us. April and August are already booked pretty much solid.
Totally. So I have this Lancer now. That doesn't run, but here's the thing. I've updated all kinds of parts around the engine, taken good care of it, and now the engine decides to go. Yay. So
with
now
what,
I have to 78,000 miles.
Unbelievable.
So I am taking a hit on it. The reality that's happened since the last podcast of the Evo engine is just sitting down legitimately and going, what's the path of least resistance financially? And as horrifying as it is to say, the least resistance path is to just drop it. So I'm going to hopefully sell it to somebody for, I don't know, a couple grand or so that wants to take it and put an engine in it. They'll end up with a car that is actually, even putting money into it, is worth more than they put in, which is great.
Absolutely.
I would be
the
massive other way of that equation. I'd be totally upside down. So that is my plan on the Lancer, which is not how I wanted to see that car go. So that is in the process. If you're a person out there that you said, I really want that car, hey, let me know, because I am in that process right now. In the next few weeks, that car will go unceremoniously, which is a bummer, honestly.
Yeah.
But now I really need the Phaeton to run. This is the opposite of car guy life. I've also realized what this really makes me want to do, honestly, is have a car that's pretty new that runs really well. Just for a while. Just kind of like a palate cleanse. I also solved my four car problem. I don't have four cars anymore.
You did inadvertently solve that.
I accidentally solved that problem. And here's the thing. It's not like the Lancer was being hooned at the time. It was being driven down the freeway.
Just
and then
normally,
it decided, and I'm done. So, yay.
Oh, man, I'm so sorry. All right, well, if you've got a solution, thoughts, please let us know, write to us. And if you're interested and you are able to take that on as a build project, please contact us, and Todd will talk you through all the details.
It's going to need a tow. But anyway.
It is. It might have to be flatbedded somewhere.
You're not going to drive it away. I'm just letting you know.
Well, we have a couple of debates that actually tie into this very much so. First from Brandon in Dallas, Texas. Down the rabbit hole we go, and he's got a situation where he's got a friend who talked him into one car, and he wants to maybe palate cleanse, kind of in the same situation.
Totally. I thought about it as well. It definitely relates.
It relates. Yeah. And it also, at some point, I'm doing my best to make it happen, and that is...
I know.
You see where it's coming.
You guys will see it too. These are almost a swap.
I read an article. It's like the game of memory. You remember that old game?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like,
Which car was that one?
Wait, where was that? And totally. I matched that email with this one, and I think... Come on.
I love it.
Let's do it. Somebody should buy the other person who is getting rid of a car, and somebody's interested in that particular one.
I saw the thread
All
of both of those.
All we have to
this.
Do yeah. is send you your emails and make the e-introduction, and here you go.
I saw how Brandon is feeling feeling what I'm feeling, and I saw how after the break when we talk about Matt, you're going to be like, shouldn't he just swap with the... Anyway,
That's the whole idea.
Both of those, which is very funny. I'm hoping we can solve that. What I'm also hoping is that when Brandon says he wants to trade up, he means the truck and not the friend.
Anyway,
he says, thanks to my dumb friend Jason, I bought this Jeep over an older, more reliable Toyota SUV. The Jeep he's talking about is an XJ Cherokee that he has that he so wants to love, and it's making it difficult.
Yeah, he says he currently owns this XJ, an ND Miata, and a Suzuki SV650, and he says on paper it sounds like a fairly ideal garage.
Yeah.
And he says the SV650 and the ND Miata are stock. Mm-hmm. But it's the XJ that is giving him the anxiety you and I are feeling
completely,
with our cars.
Completely. Yeah.
It's got a moderate lift, 31-inch tires, winch, and bumper. And his intent was to do the light off-roading thing. Mm-hmm. Trails, mountain biking, road trips, camping trips, other utilitarian kinds of uses.
Sure.
He has spent a good amount of money on the Jeep over the last year trying to make it reliable and nice to drive, nice for what it is. He says, I've got no expectations of it driving like a brand new car.
Yeah.
But in the last year, he's replaced the heater core twice, the radiator, both front hub assemblies, the steering box, the power steering pump. He's put in four new Bilstein shocks, added a hitch mount bike rack, and he's done a variety of other maintenance items that's just stuff that goes on that you want to do.
And here's the problem when you do that, because I've had this experience with the Lancer and other cars in my history too, but certainly with the Lancer. When you start replacing that many things, you have this little tickle in the back of your mind that is, could I have just solved it? Is that the last one that gets me over the hump and now it's just going to run? And you have that terrible thing in the back of your mind where you're like, if I cut loose now, is the next owner going to get the greatest car ever because I solved all the problems? And that keeps you kind of going back to get slapped again because you just I've been there.
And then there's more money after that money that pours in.
I've been there.
Okay, if I'm solving this problem, I should really buy the more expensive thing to really solve the problem.
Yes, I've been there. And that's the problem is the more you put in, the more you think, I think I've solved it this time. Have you?
That's what
this
you
is
think.
The problem. And trust me, I relate to this. It's like a drug in this part. Mm-hmm. Keep going.
All right. So Brandon says, we are now at the point where he's got a good deal invested in the Jeep and more than he'll be able to get from the sale of the car. Mm-hmm. Okay. But he continues to run into gremlins, he says. It's also very hard to find original parts for the car. And he's had to turn to aftermarket for a lot of the stuff, which frequently have fitment issues and quality issues and all that stuff. So... because of all these issues, he has not used it for what he intended.
He can't trust it to take it down a trail, camping, light off-roading, mountain bike. He doesn't trust it.
He says,
which
I haven't been off-roading in over a year, doesn't have the confidence. On the other hand, he likes the Miata. He's got a sports car. Mm-hmm. And he says it's fun, but he's not particularly attached to it. Mm. This is a bold statement here, Brandon. If it were totaled tomorrow, he's not sure he would go out and buy another one.
Okay.
That's
right.
Telling to me.
There's
something to take note there.
Yeah.
He says it's got the daily driver needs. He says minus the bike transportation. And he says in his past, he's had a Honda Prelude, Mark 7 VW GTI, and a Fiesta ST. So he knows.
Good stuff.
Fun
good
cars.
Stuff. Yeah, yeah.
All right, he's had some usual suspects, and he says, I like having a manual for the weekend. You know, it was nice driving the Jeep to work because of the traffic along the route that he has is very traffic heavy. A 4-mile route that takes 30 to 45 minutes. Wow.
Which, yeah, I thought instantly, you could walk that fast. Then he makes the comment where he said, I should be riding my bike, but it's Texas and it's hot and I have to wear a tie. I totally relate to that. I do understand what you're saying. This is one of those situations, I hate to say it, Brandon, but I knew people that did this. Could you shower at work?
Oh, interesting.
Honestly. Maybe. Could you shower at work and bike to work? I knew people that did that.
That is actually an option.
Because when literally your traffic, and we live in LA, I've seen it in Texas as well. Your traffic is walking pace.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's nuts.
4 miles in 45 minutes is like a brisk walk. Seriously.
I hate to suggest a bird or a lime, but, you know, there is that.
Yeah, don't do that.
If you could.
Well, hang on a second, though. Well, but see, if he was on a scooter, he'd still be in the suit. Again, can you shower at work?
Yeah, still shower at work, backpack with clothes.
Anyway, sorry. Separate thing.
All right, so he owes money on the Miata. He suspects he could walk away from the car with about $6,000 in cash. He checked the trade-in value, and that would leave him with $4,000. He says, I don't think I'd be hard to get extra $2,000 if he sold it himself.
Okay.
And the values of Cherokee, similar to the condition of his, he says, it looks like I could sell it in the range of $7,000 to $8,000. He'd like $6,000, but he thinks he could sell it for $7,000 or $8,000.
Mm-hmm.
He's not really in a hurry. So all this means he would have about a $10,000 to $14,000 pile of cash.
Okay. That's a down payment. Got it.
He'd be willing to finance up to $20,000. That is my upper limit. Mm-hmm. He's limiting me. $20,000. But he said for the right car, he would consider selling the bike too, the Suzuki.
Okay.
He could get about $3,000 for that.
Yeah, so we're in the mid-30s here theoretically, which is great.
Mid-30s? I'm thinking just that would get him to $20,000.
If he's got the 10 to 14 plus 20, we've broken 30, add the bike.
Not 20. He would be willing to finance up to 20.
Oh, up to 20. Sorry, I misread. You're right. Okay, sorry. Apologies.
But
keep going.
He says, you know, having that bike sale would help the budget
It would. Yeah, yeah.
So he's not necessarily tied to two cars. He likes it, but he's looking for maybe a naturally aspirated V8 rear-wheel drive. He says he doesn't like the Camaro. He likes the Mustang. His girlfriend hates the Mustang because of the stigma. Mustangs.
She likes crowds. She doesn't want a Mustang. I understand. I get it.
He's looked at used Corvettes.
I'm sorry. I know that's the cliche, That's where we're going.
Apparently, the roads in Dallas are terrible. I've only been driven around. I've only Ubered through Dallas briefly to the airport, and it was a long time ago.
It's the infrastructure problem that exists in Atlanta and LA and all these places, and that is constant traffic beating up the roads constantly, and there's never a time to shut them and really close them. When you do, that project takes years. This is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. All right, so now he and his friend Jason are at the point where they're drinking
that friend,
beer.
That friend that helped you the first time with the Jeep. That friend who's listening now, by the way. Hi, man.
Yeah, they're drinking many beers, musing over this predicament. They've spent a lot of time thinking about this, and Brandon's about to just turn everything in and go for the beigeness of conformity and buy a comfy 4Runner. I don't think either of us recommend that for you.
Okay, I agree.
I don't know what your choices are, Tom, but I don't think that's where we're at. I went all over, and then I think I've got your car.
Really? Okay, good.
Brandon, I think I've landed on it. You remember, it's a short commute. It's not like we're doing a 60-mile commute and we're moving. It's
Agreed.
A short commute.
Yeah.
Maybe manual. I think, Brandon, 2020 is your year.
Okay.
It's time to clean house.
All right.
I am recommending you sell it all.
I am too.
Sell it
I am
all.
Too. It's clean slate
it's
time.
It's a fresh, clean start.
It's interesting you went there because I had the same thought. Keep going.
It's time for tough love, Brandon.
Uh-oh.
This is for your health. Physical and mental.
For your love of cars. Here we go. Yep.
Sell the Jeep, and you're not smitten with the Miata. Sell that too. Sell the bike. All right. Mm-hmm.
So you're calculating that he's dealing with mid-20s.
He's given me a cap of 20. I'm really trying to stay there.
Well, but
he says $20,000
financed
it.
As I read this, I suppose you could read two ways. I read it as if he's got 10 or so in cash, he could finance up to another 20. That's how I read that.
I didn't think it was on top of that.
Either way.
I got the idea was just
okay, so you're dealing with probably $20,000. All right, keep going.
So, I've got two options for you. The first option is it's a consideration because you mentioned you have the Jeep. You've wanted this off-road lifestyle, and you mentioned the 4Runner. You need to go find a 2012, 2013, or 2014 Porsche Cayenne V6.
Oh, I see where you went.
It gives you some light off-roading, and it is, seriously, one of the better handling, if not the best handling, SUV for its size and class that will still be fun on a road. It will be fun on a curvy road. It's astounding. Mm-hmm. If you don't believe me, I dare you.
You're talking how new? 2013,
2014.
So you're getting into second gen.
Is right in that second gen. That's the new body style change. Yeah. 2012 was the prior gen. The 2013s had... No, it was up
Cayenne.
To 2014.
It was up 2010 was the generation I have. Then it jumped at 2011 was the beginning of the next gen. So you're in the next gen, which is great.
Yeah, the next gen. The second gen, essentially. Yeah, yeah. And then the headlights and taillights change a little bit between those...
Yeah, about 14s or so. Yeah, yeah.
You know, between those generations. So somewhere in there... V6, and I know you're thinking, oh no, Porsche, it's going to be unreliable. None of that. Todd's wife's Porsche
Cayenne.
It's the
best car we have ever owned.
Here we go. This is a ringing endorsement. Now, they've kept up with the maintenance.
Yes, we have, but it is truly the best car I've ever owned, and my wife looked at me recently, and she said, we can never sell this car because it's the only thing we know that always works. You heard my story earlier. My wife is like, the Cayenne stays.
What's the mileage on that now?
Almost 130,000.
Yeah. So if you buy one for 70 and you drive it for 3 years,
or
4 years or 5 years, now you're at the same mileage. It's going to run.
I like this.
Keep on top of the mileage. It gives you the light off-roading, the space.
I love this.
And since you wear a tie, you're going to roll in. People are going to say, what? How much are you making now?
Yeah.
Rocking the Porsche? This is my minimal option. I have the car for you, Brandon.
I like that one, though. That's good. That's really
good. It's
interesting. Well done. Very well done. Yeah, yeah.
You said rear-wheel drive V8. You don't like the Camaros, your girlfriend doesn't want a Mustang, and I don't think a Challenger is for you.
Okay.
So you need to look hard and fall in love with the fifth generation 2004 to 2006 Pontiac GTO.
Oh.
Really nice ones are 15 grand.
Yeah, they are.
The 2004 models had the 5.7 liter LS1 V8 with 350 horsepower. But if you go to 2005 and 2006, they came with that 6-liter LS2 V8.
Yeah, they did.
400 horsepower. I found you a 2005 with 47,000 miles. The floor mats are still wrapped in plastic, black on black, perfectly clean for $18,500.
Oh, done. Done.
It's the muscle car. It's rear-wheel drive.
Yeah.
It's V8.
Yeah.
Your commute is not far that would not justify spending that kind of money on a thirsty 6-liter V8 on the fuel for that.
Yeah.
It's just a short. You're
going
to be idling, but still. You're going to fall in love with these. Go looking for 05 and 06 Pontiac GTOs.
Hmm.
It's a fresh, clean year for you, my friend.
You did well. You did well there.
It's going to be great for road trips.
Yeah.
You can put bikes on it. There's plenty of space.
Nobody knows what it is. You just don't see them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You could rebadge. You could go the Holden Monaro thing and totally rebadge it. What is this interesting thing? The really nice ones, you can find one for 8 to 10.
Yeah, you
They've
can,
got higher mileage, and it'll be fine.
Sure.
But if you want something special, spend 12, 15, 18, and that's right in your budget. You've got something totally different, manual, automatic, whatever your flavor is, whatever
Look
you decide.
You.
Pontiac GTO, my friend.
Well done.
Thank you.
I think you were inspired on this one. I don't feel like I did nearly that well. I like both of those. Of course, I have to endorse the Cayenne because, again, that's the car I have that I never think about.
I keep looking at that as the paramount example. I keep thinking, all right, well, Todd's is just running. They keep putting money in for maintenance, oil changes, and whatever it needs.
Yeah.
And it just, you pick me up in it, run to the
airport.
It
feels great, doesn't it? Yeah.
It's tight. It's crisp. It handles well.
Totally.
The door slam is solid. This is how I measure.
This is how you measure.
Over years.
Yeah, yeah.
It's scientific. It really is. No, it's not.
I do love that. I have a couple that I want you to think about because I agree with you, Paul. I think this is sell at all time. It's you need a palate cleanser.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I also think you need, you went more used than I went.
Okay.
Because I'm in my current personal headspace here and I'm admitting that it affects me for Brandon. But I think
isn't
you need something
though?
Close to new.
Okay.
So that you can feel like it's reliable.
Let's shop at a dealership.
And I'm assuming, and I'm not going full new, but I'm assuming you're dealing with around 25 grand.
Okay. All
okay.
Right.
Maybe you've got 30 if you get lucky, but I'm assuming about 25 grand. Okay.
Right.
So in that world, I have three I want you to look at.
All right.
They're very different, But if you really want to do the off-road thing, if that really is a thing for you that you want to get into, but you need to do all the other stuff as well, get a WRX. Just go get a WRX.
Yeah, for sure.
Just go embrace it. Does the commute bother you enough that you want to be in the CVT? No, we don't like CVTs, but among them, that is the best. So you could have the automatic if you wanted, and then you've got the WRX. And of course, do you want to go crazy and tune it? You're a guy that kind of tunes. You left the other two stock you mentioned, but you actually have done stuff to the Jeep. Get a WRX, be happy. Okay,
sure,
that is in my opinion, that is a perfectly good, solves the problem, and is still fun. Okay? So I have to start there.
Right.
Now two others couldn't be more different from each other, and you kind of lose your off-roading in the process.
Okay.
So I don't know how important that is to you in the grand scheme. One is go get yourself a 228i BMW.
Lovely.
With the 8-speed automatic.
Those are just new and tight, and they run.
But I'm talking about a few years old.
Yeah,
you don't have to get
in comparison to an XJ Cherokee.
Totally,
they're sparkling new.
Absolutely. So they made it last week by comparison.
Exactly.
I get it. Yes.
Yes.
So get one of those. It's got a 4-cylinder with like 250 horsepower. That's fine. Trust me, it's going to be more powerful and more fun than you think.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And because of what it is, you show up in a suit at the office, and you're great.
Totally.
You want an automatic? Fine. You want to pull the paddles in because you're on a back road? On the rare times you find that outside Dallas, you're still going to enjoy yourself.
Right.
So 228i.
Right.
And then the last one, if you want to be in fun, that is the fun thing that I could actually see you throwing a bike on the back anytime. And it can be a little rugged and playful, but is still just fun and decent to commute in as well. Veloster N.
Those are so cool.
They're great.
They're
now
so
that is
cool.
That is a 6-speed manual. You are actually rowing your own gears on the commute. How bad is your commute? How willing are you to do that? That is not a difficult manual. It's not like, ow, my leg hurts. It's not one of those manuals.
Sure,
okay?
Sure.
But it is genuinely a lot of fun. And it's got a great amount of personality. Yeah. If the road opens up, you're going to love that car. You're not going to do a whole lot of off-roading, but throw your bike on that. Let's go somewhere. Veloster Ns are cool.
Yeah, they're excellent. Have any of you ever driven a car that has enough torque in it where you can, in first gear, just let the clutch out and you can just creep along with your feet off the gas?
Yeah.
So that's your, like, transmission creep. You just, I'm slowly creeping in traffic, the clutch is out, my foot's off the gas, and the engine's just, come on, just enough to move the car at 2 miles an hour.
I did that in sixth gear in a Hellcat once, yeah.
Now, that engine has some torque, and you're able to do it in any gear. You're able to do it in, like, 10th gear or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, whatever, let's just do that.
But, yes, you could do that. All right, well, guys, thank you so much for writing to us. Write us your stories, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com, or on the website, everydaydriver.com. You can find the contact button under the About tab in the top right corner.
Please do.
Love to hear from you guys. Tell us your stories. Bring your Topic Tuesdays. We're in the middle of a Topic Tuesday series, but keep them coming.
Yeah, for sure.
And we're looking forward to hearing all of them. The weather's changing, but the sun is still out, and it's baking your car's interior.
Luckily, all you need is a custom sunscreen from our friends at Covercraft. They're awesome. They're amazing. These foldable sunscreens fit perfectly in the windshield of your car and keep your car cooler when you're off enjoying the sunshine.
These custom sunscreens come in a variety of colors, and they're an affordable and simple way to keep your car cooler in the summer and protected from damaging UV rays all year long.
We swear by our custom sunscreens. I love it. It's one of our very favorite car accessories. Remember, you can get 10% off your car sunscreen by using the code EVERYDAY right now at covercraft.com, or you can follow the link from our sponsors page.
You might not be buying a car right now, but you're probably still looking. We're all looking all the time, and it seems like there's always a new place to search. That's why we love autotempest.com.
With Auto Tempest, you can only enter your search one time and see results from Cars.com, eBay, all of Craigslist, and many more. Or you can jump to Auto Trader or Car Gurus without entering anything new. Your same search on a new site.
So if you're looking for fun or you need a car right now, don't search all over. Start at Autotempest.com. All the cars, one search. Matt G. is in Durham, North Carolina, writing to us for a second car.
Yeah.
Do you remember what I said at the top of the podcast about trying to make the pink slips happen? I'm trying to make one buyer buy a car from another.
Matt, meet Brandon. Brandon, meet Matt. Brandon, I hear, has an XJ Cherokee. I wonder what Matt wants.
Matt, are you listening? All right. So Matt's been listening a while. As a matter of fact, he has. He's been introduced to the podcast by his friend Kyle, who we did a car debate last year.
We got a lot of friends being simultaneously good and bad influences on their other friends here. I like this. It's good.
Matt's got a 2014 BMW 335i M Sport.
Okay.
Got 2017.
Right,
he said the car was lowered when he bought it, but he's added an intake, strut brace, a flash tune. Mm-hmm. And he says it's fast, it's a joy to drive, but he he flinches. He cringes going in and out of steeper driveways due to the scraping. He's already lost two splitters from hitting objects in the road. And his previous car was an 05 325i. So he's a BMW guy.
All right. I like it. It works.
So think second car.
Okay.
And this would be one that could more easily get out of a parking lot. Something with 31-inch tires and unlifted Bilsteins.
Yeah, certainly.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And he says, I want to carry the occasional large item. Is that large item a floor-standing ATM machine by any chance, Matt?
Easy.
Like, what sort of large item are we talking here?
you went straight to grand theft. I like it. That's awesome.
Yeah, I want to get out of a parking lot, and I want to carry a large item. Is that an ATM machine? Do you need to what are we talking
We're hauling here? Chains to get there and a cutter, and then I need to haul it away.
I know
and
I'm
I need
reading between the lines here and
that's
all.
That's terrible.
You know, what sort of large...
You shouldn't be writing scripts while we do this podcast. That's a bad combination
for you. And it was singular. In his email, it was one...
A large item.
Large item.
I've come here for your ATM. I brought
guessing.
My Cherokee. And we keep joking the Cherokee because he said, I'm currently... Did you hear the front half of the podcast?
Yeah.
Matt, I'm currently interested in late 90s, early 2000s Jeep Cherokees. Guess what? That is an XJ Cherokee. And our friend Brandon in Dallas really wants out of his. And if you listen to the first half of the podcast, we think he might have solved all the problems.
Uh-huh.
We're not really sure.
And
but
he's
we
money
think
into
he
it.
May have. Yeah.
Matt, he's poured a bunch of money into it because Matt likes that boxier design.
Yes.
And he said he thinks it would be a good car to improve his wrenching abilities.
Boy, does Brandon have wrenching abilities available to you.
No
opportunities
kidding.
Abound, yes.
Hello. All right. He's also interested in wagons like the Allroad. He mm-hmm. said something automatic would be preferred. Aren't Jeep XJ Cherokees automatics?
I think so.
I think last time
and
I checked.
And his budget is around $13,000, and I'm not going to tell you again. I'm not going to tell you, Matt, but you're going to have to rewind and find out. Brandon actually told us what he wants for his Jeep. So this is it's kismet. It just works. Yeah.
Here we go. The only other recommendation I have for you if you're looking for wagons is your former car, the Saab 92X.
Oh, you went to Subaru. Okay.
Because you roll it into a Subaru dealer for service.
Well, and you go to your local auto parts store and go, I have an 05 WRX, and they go, which parts do you need? I mean, there are piles of them.
Exactly.
Yeah, got them
do you have
back.
Any parts that have three car company brand names on them? Fuji, Saab, and Subaru?
Yeah.
By any chance, do you have any of those
kind well,
that's of
parts? The funny thing about it is you go in and you buy the Subaru parts, and they're perfect, and they cost you less than if you went on to Saab whatever and got the Saab part, which is just a rebadged version of the other part. It's
exactly.
ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
But that's just, you know, the really outlier
okay.
conversation
all right. All right.
here because, you know, that the XJ Cherokee is going to happen, right? It's got to happen.
Theoretically.
It's got to happen.
I actually thought about, look, you're a BMW guy. Have you thought about finding yourself a nice 3 Series wagon?
Be great.
Just a non-lowered 3 Series wagon if you want to be a BMW guy. Now, granted, this is second car, so if you're keeping the other BMW, you probably don't
I mean,
have
I'm
a
I'm guessing he's
dual
keeping that
garage.
3 Series.
Yeah, probably.
You know, so you have a wagon and a sedan, which, you know, that means you'd be like the super freak BMW guy.
Well, indeed.
Which is okay.
Do you need an SUV? That's my other question. I mean, look, you said you want to get it. This is, hang on, I want to unpack this one direction real quick, Matt. And that is, you say to us, I have a lowered BMW. That scrapes on stuff leaving parking
because
lots.
Because he's been trying to carry the ATM machine in that
It's
thing.
Too bad. He's
That's
got a,
why you're scraping
He's got a lowered
that.
BMW that scrapes. He wants to get a car that doesn't do that, so he jumps to SUV. Wait, there's plenty of middle ground. A normal car at normal ride height will probably not scrape. I'm just saying. You don't have to jump big.
Yeah.
I mean, on all roads, even got that little lift. You don't need a lift. You just need a normal riding car, okay, which opens up the world
exactly.
to you immensely.
There's all kinds of
he
stuff.
Could do, honestly, he could do, forget all road for a minute, the A4 Avant like you had. So it's the wagon version
Sweet.
Of the A4 is very cool. The wagon version of the BMW is cool as well. But you could do those. What about an old, because you'd have to for your budget, but an old E-Class wagon?
Oh, super cool.
What's the most E-Class wagon you can get for your budget? Be careful of the maintenance that's been done. But what about that? We've got a friend in town here that's had one. They actually just sold their old one, got a newer one. It's still used. But every E-Class they've had has been their best car.
The next 7-Eleven that you go to, take a tape measure with you.
You're just stuck in a rut.
And you're going to want to measure the exterior dimensions of the ATM machine.
I can't believe that's where you went.
Fit into
okay.
the...
Matt, I don't believe you're trying to rob anything, but apparently you have one big item to carry, so be careful. Yeah.
All right, it's a TV. Fine. All right, we'll jump into questions. We've got to jump in here to this particular one from Jason Donovan on Facebook, asking us on ways to improve traffic flow.
Mm.
Jason spends a lot of time in China and has been recently impressed with their highway systems. They're similar to the U.S., but he says each lane has a mandated speed. Each lane has a mandated speed
yeah.
instead of just one overall speed, as we all have in the U.S. So the left lane is fastest, middle lane is a little slower, and then the slow lane obviously is the posted speed right there.
Yeah.
It says tractor trailers are not allowed in the fast lane as they're designated to the slow and the middle lanes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How could we implement this in the United States?
What's interesting, Jason, I don't know if you know this, but California is one of the states that does this. There are states, and it's a state-by-state law, there are states that do not allow 18-wheelers in the far left lane.
I thought it was all of them. I could be I stand
corrected.
I don't
think it's all.
Because
anyway.
it's trailers. It's not the 18-wheelers. It's the laws about trailering. Mm-hmm. You can't do a trailer, but mm-hmm. I think it does vary with length and overall weight, that kind of thing.
Because I don't think that law applies in Utah.
I know the trailering law does.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
The far out of the far left lane?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I remember in California, they were very strict about it, and those guys stayed out of the left lane in California.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a state-by-state thing, as far as I know it, and that would help. But the problem that he's touching on, and I want you to answer further, but the problem he's touching on is the thing we keep coming back to is how on earth would we increase driver instruction in this country? And that's difficult. I think near impossible.
You're touching on that, and that's right where it comes down to is driver instruction, because I think all of us have fallen into lazy habits.
Mm-hmm.
I know I do. I pass somebody, and then I inadvertently stay in the left lane when I probably should get over one lane.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think, all right, I'm the big dog, and I'm cruising in my Maserati. I'm going to pass you in my Maserati.
Because when you're driving the Maserati, you instantly think, I'm the big dog. That's what happens. That's just the disease right there.
That's what I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm driving a Quattroporte. Come on. I'm going to pass you. So I think that it would come down to driver education, but how do you do that? Mm-hmm. We have decades of ingrained habits in all of us. It just legacy driving, just ingrained.
Yeah, true.
And I think people have forgotten just the basics. I believe the driver's handbook in every U.S. state does say the left lane is for passing, is designated as the passing lane. Some states actually enforce this more than others.
You'll
see reminders and say, it's for passing only, tickets and fines. If you're not, slow traffic, stay out of that left lane.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it would be really tough to just suddenly switch over. It would be a nationwide campaign. It would
be difficult.
A massive undertaking by the federal government.
It's like that thing that's happened in a few countries in the last 20 years where they were driving on the right-hand side of the road and they swapped to left-hand side. And they literally – there's a few countries in the world that have done this in the last 20 years. And it's funny to listen to the logistics of it because they literally go to like midnight one night, and at midnight everybody swaps. You wake up the next morning, and now you're on the other side of the road. How badly does that go for the first week? Is what I always wondered. Oh. But anyway, yeah.
All right, I think it's going to be tough.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think there's an outside chance you could do this because it would mean just a massive re-education campaign, and then all those old habits slip back in. You'd still be.
Well, it's just the driving instruction here, the entry, and I hate to say this, but the bar for entry is way too low. It needs to be more I genuinely hate to say this, but I think it's the answer in the first answer. I think it needs to be a more difficult round of testing, and it needs to cost more to do it.
I agree. And Jason, I think the only way it could happen is as legislators recognize the onslaught of autonomy and start to push on city and federal governments to prepare for autonomous lanes and transportation authorities to build autonomous features and that kind of thing. I think that is probably the only opportunity to introduce the rest of what you're talking about.
Okay, and a lane hierarchy that is instigated because we've got to have autonomy.
Because now this new lane exists for autonomous.
All right.
We're rethinking everything, everyone.
Sure.
And we've got the new lane, and here's the rethinking of the new stretch of highway.
That's good.
That's
I like that.
Only
I see that.
Real entry into rethinking it and re-educating the public on this.
Wow. That's interesting. That's a good call. Ted the Theologian said, Ted Theologian, I always misread that, said on Instagram, when was the last time we drove 10 tents? I think there's a question behind this question, which is, does anybody ever drive 10 tents? I think is what he's asking. But I actually do have an answer for this. And the answer for me is Spa this year in the Cayman GTS.
Oh, yeah.
By the end of the day, I was driving that car as hard as I possibly could. There wasn't a layer in me beyond the level that I was driving. Please don't get me wrong. It doesn't mean I couldn't be a better driver. Yes, I could be.
Sure.
But I was at the place where I was stretching myself and pushing a little harder than I did the last lap and really driving it for all it was worth. And that's the first time in a long time I felt the freedom, because we also were in a situation where you and I weren't talking to camera by the end of that day.
That's true.
Most of the time when you and I are in a car, especially even on track, we are still engaging with the camera. And by its nature requires a level of, I have to have a little bit of my brain over here, so I need to pull back just a smidge. We weren't talking to camera. We weren't worried about passengers. By the end of that day at Spa, also, the folks that are left are the folks that are really trying to squeeze every bit out of the day, and it's thinned out a lot.
Right.
And
right.
I was driving as hard as I could.
I was having a blast, too. Yeah, we... The days. As a matter of fact, I'll bring up the Spec Racer Ford. When you and I were on
that's another good
the
one.
Slick
that's
Hoosiers,
another good one, yeah.
I know I was at 10 tenths on a few corners, and I was flat to the floor with entry speed, and I just thought, all right, now's the time.
Yeah.
Let's see if she hangs on.
Yep.
And it did.
Yeah.
That was
that's another
that
really good
very
one. That was
10 tenths for me.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Jake Ramey asks, what do we think is the youth car of today? What is the car that is being made for the youth of the country? Well,
for all the youngins. What's the car for the young people? I don't know what voice
that
is.
Please ask
anyway.
It in that voice.
Yeah.
Scion is gone.
Yes, it is.
I think that thinking is gone. I think that is being beaten out of car manufacturers that are now looking at demographic data about people buying.
We should
make
a CUV.
Oh, yeah.
You know what we need to make is another CUV. You know what we haven't made yet this year? Another CUV.
You know what? We could find a CUV slotting in between those two right there. They're like $2,000 apart.
If we try, we could do another CUV with a CVT.
Sorry, was all that too sarcastic?
No, it's fine.
I think it's going to be tech. But as far as tech is concerned, we're not there at a price point that I could afford when I was in my 20s, which was just last week, by the way.
Recently, yeah.
I think tech would have appealed to me. As you know, I'm very all about it. I love it. I love the old school feeling of analog. I'm very conflicted sometimes.
You are. You are, for sure.
But I do like that, and I think tech is increasingly that way. I don't think there's going to be a car brand that's focused on that. No. Scion's gone. I think it's gone for good. I think that sort of headspace for...
Then we make a sub-brand for a market segment, maybe. Yeah,
because it's going to be feature-based, and it's going to either be this flavor of that car. It's going to be the entry flavor of the Tesla Model 3.
Yeah.
Versus,
sure.
You know, the retired couple who can afford to load one up to $62,000. I couldn't have done that, and, you know, I could barely squeeze into a Honda Accord.
Yeah, sure.
We know what it's like. So I think tech will be the leader there, but tech isn't in a price point now that like a Scion would be. You know, you can't go buy a tech heavy car for $16,000 or $21,000. You can't. You just get kind of the basics.
Yeah.
So you got to go backwards, which is not a bad thing. You got to go older cars because I like that. It teaches people, you know, what older cars feel like. And then as you make more money throughout your career, hopefully, and you work up to something, and then you can decide what's for you.
Got a great one here from Randy Dunning Jr. says, how do I convince my wife that buying a cheap sports car is perfectly fine? This is what you're talking about. As generally, and a broad
brush. That was almost a Randy Travis voice there.
Broad strokes here. As we age, we typically try to buy nicer, more expensive stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Cars follow, houses follow. That's just kind of how we are. The way you live at 50 is not the way typically you lived at 25.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Sure.
Doesn't necessarily mean you live better or worse, but just you live differently and typically with a higher price tag. They have escalated through their cars. They had an RX-8. They had a C5 Corvette. Now they have an F-Type Jag. You see the progression there, okay?
Yes.
You can see the progression of the buyer and you can see the progression of the income. So he would like to buy. He's missing small, tiny, cheap stuff.
Hmm.
And his wife is going, we're not stepping backwards. We're not doing that. It's essentially, we bought the really nice house. Why are we going to go buy the junk house again? Why are we going to buy our first house again? Because we have this nice house now. This is the conversation.
Sure.
The discussion here, Randy, and I don't know that you're going to be able to navigate this well, but here is the thing. What you're buying is an experience you don't currently have. And look, and your wife's probably listening, so I got to step really carefully here.
Easy.
But here's the other part of it. We always talk about the joke of don't trade up spouses, trade up cars. You guys stay happily married and navigate this happily married. Okay, that's the key thing here. But you know that thing that happens when a marriage goes awry and either party, by the way, decides to get themselves somebody half their old spouse's age?
Celebrity magazines are full of this phenomenon, by the way.
And I actually heard somebody that was a counselor, okay, make the comment where they said a 60-year-old that marries a 25-year-old is awesome when he's 60. Or actually, he said 60 and 40 is awesome when they're 60 and 40. You don't want to see him when she's 60 and he's 80 because it starts to get ugly. Anyway, but and this was a marriage counsel. Didn't matter. But the point I'm making here is you're looking for that simple, small, light, cheap, young experience in your car, not your wife.
Yes.
Okay. This is the opposite experience of what you have everywhere else, and you can do it with cars with no fallout.
Mm.
Okay. You want to have a totally different experience. If your wife,
for consequence free environment,
theoretically, if she theoretically wanted to do a girls trip that was like the girls trip she did in college.
There's cruise ships designed specifically for this, by the way.
Yes, yeah, a whole separate thing. You could argue, why would you do that? You're not in college anymore. Well, but it's the girls from college. You can see why. This is what the small, cheap sports car is. It's an experience we don't have now. And the other thing about it that I've been thinking about a lot is we've had this Miata RF, and I have my Lotus that I love.
It's an itch.
There's a preciousness factor.
Yeah, for sure.
There's things with that Jag F-Type, and I want to say this to your wife as well now, that you guys are never going to do with that F-Type. Because I don't want to do that with it. What if we ding it? It costs a lot of money. It's really nice. I don't want to do fill in the blank.
Jump the bridge in the neighborhood?
Sure.
At
50 why not?
Miles
yeah,
an hour?
Let, you know what? The railroad tracks have got a nice hump to them, and the landing's decent, too.
I never did that in a friend's 83 GTI hang out the sunroof. I did not do that.
You didn't do it at all. But so this is what I'm saying. If you buy a Miata for 10 grand and you want to go sideways in a parking lot, do that.
Yeah.
You want to do that in the Jag F-Type? You're going to have a conversation about. Should we? Because what if it goes wrong? If it goes wrong, let's say you get one of those Miatas that's $4,000 or $5,000.
Even better.
If it goes wrong in your disposable $4,000 or $5,000 Miata, it's a bummer.
You can increase your speed, though.
Yeah. It's a bummer.
For the jump, but, we but could the consequences, go even faster on entry.
The financial consequences are less. This is the reason for a small, cheap sports car. And what I'm hoping is I've somehow navigated this for you guys to have a conversation and now not a fight.
All right. There's three folks asking about tech, as a matter of fact, on Instagram. Well, actually, a combination of Facebook and Instagram. Benzin217, Kelvin Tamayo, and Steve Urban are all asking about the Las Vegas Auto, actually CES 2020. Specifically, the Sony Electric concept that was introduced. And Benzin217 is asking about thoughts on the design or technology. Yes, as you have admitted here, it's super unlikely ever to go into production, although Sony has not specifically said what their plans are for the future with this car. It is currently a showpiece that actually, I think, looks way better than a Tesla Model 3. Mm-hmm. It looks really well done. It's sensitive. It's interesting. It looks production ready. It's not just, wow, crazy show car with a awesome stereo. That's not what they did. They're showcasing all this technology and kind of teasing, here's the directions we're going. We're going to touch on automotive. We're going to touch on this area, you know, LiDAR, solid-state LiDAR and sensors and all this kind of stuff.
Sure, yeah.
Really interesting choice to do that with, which tells me the importance of the automotive industry to every tech company. Sony, designing and manufacturing a car built by Magna Steyr, the same company building Supras and BMW Z4s.
Yeah.
They're a contract builder, contract manufacturer.
Yep.
They spent real money on this.
They did. Well, but you bring up the right point, and that is it's funny because Sony, being a huge tech company known for being cutting edge in tech forever, looked around clearly one day at a board meeting and went, everybody in tech is building a car. Should we build a car? Do you know anything about cars? Let's build a car. Apparently tech people are doing cars. And here we are.
I mean, car manufacturers started using CES to introduce bits and pieces of tech. Sony's
now it's whole cars.
Sony's done the whole thing now, as a matter of fact. Now the Fisker Ocean and all this stuff. I get it.
Forget the PlayStation 5. What about the PlayStation car? That's where we're headed.
Yeah, seriously.
Terrible.
To be honest, it's very interesting. I like how it looks. I like what Sony has done and what they're doing and where they're thinking. It's a bit of the Dyson thinking. Remember how Dyson brand was toying with the electric car. The last news that I have heard is they're not.
Yeah, because they went way down the road.
Building cars are hard.
Yeah. They went way down the road until they discovered this is both difficult and expensive. And then they went, let's not do that.
I think Apple walked into that same room full of brakes. Wow, building actual cars is kind of hard. It's a lot of pieces to make one product.
Well, and I've said before, and I'll say it here again, the problem with cars versus anything you build in tech is the level of safety you have to build. You're not building your tech thing to have nearly the safety restrictions of your car.
Oh, absolutely.
And once you get into all of that kind of legal quagmire, best of luck navigating that.
Yeah, anyway. No kidding. It's interesting. It's fascinating. I'm glad they're doing it. I'm glad they're pushing on it. But for them to actually build a car, that's an entirely different level. But as far as introducing tech, the automotive industry is where it's at. It will continue to be. Mm. But notice, nothing about that is about a driving experience.
No, of course not.
Not a thing.
Why we care about driving. Yeah, why that? Jesus has got a great couple of questions. Let's see if I can answer these quickly. I'm going to do them in reverse order. His second question was, he feels like, and we talked about it as well, Lincoln has experienced a turnaround. Very cool. Could Infiniti do this?
Mm.
Or what would Infiniti have to do to make that happen? I think the problem with Infiniti is the fact that it is not a global brand, and it is not a car that is built on a series of cars that give it the right start.
Hmm.
Okay? If you look what's below Infiniti, which is Nissan, what is Nissan making? Front-wheel drive CVTs for the average person.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay? And trying to sell them in volume. We just drove the Nissan Rogue. This is their highest volume car. You get a very good sense of the company in that regard.
Yeah.
Infiniti is trying to be BMW or Mercedes or whatever. Rear-wheel drive, luxurious. You have no platforms to build on.
Mm-hmm.
Lincoln can pull from stuff Ford is doing and apply it. There's nothing really for Infiniti to pull from. And Nissan's a big company, but there's not great stuff to pull from there. I think that's the big problem. And I also don't think they are a well enough established or known or volume brand with a history that kind of infrastructure is going to be bought in on it.
Since 1990.
Exactly.
All light history.
His other question was the Alpha 4C. We've talked about our experience on it, and that we don't love it at the extremes of handling. Do we think it could be solved with tires and alignment? No, but kind of. Here's where I'm headed. I don't know the full kit because I haven't looked at it completely, but I have looked into it a little bit because those cars still intrigue me. There is supposedly a fix kit, Jesus, and I don't know everything it involves. I know there are spacers involved. I know there are degrees of spacers involved. I have not broken down to see exactly what it does. But apparently, somebody took it on themselves to play R&D and has figured out a spacers kit and different things to do with alignment and these spacers and tire choices to quote-unquote solve the handling issues and make it handle as well or better than the Elise. I have not done this personally. I have not driven one of these. It supposedly exists enough that when I have dug into it, you can find – there's the kit. You can just buy it.
Sure,
and you can find
sure.
your degree from I'm a guy that daily drives to I'm a track version, and there's variants of that as well. So there is a quote-unquote fix. Without having personal experience, I don't know, but there's something out there.
Yeah, for sure. Have to drive it. A quick thought on the Infiniti concept
here.
Hal Bullock also asked a question similar to that. How you doing, Hal? He said, you know, what does Infiniti need to do to acquire this German brand cachet? I think they need to do nothing. They need to forge their own path. But have you noticed Nissan is they're real quiet with everything going on in the news about their former CEO.
Carlos is making a spy movie, so Nissan needs to keep their head down. Yeah.
I mean, that's going
to
be a cool movie when that comes out. But
I could rant on that for a minute, but keep going.
I know. But think about the silence that we're hearing from Nissan as far as products.
Yeah.
We're not hearing about the upcoming new 370 next thing.
Hello.
We're not hearing about the new cool, fun entry-level sports car, or just, hey, we're taking tech in a new direction. We're seeing concept cars, but Infiniti also is rather quiet.
Yeah.
Now, we have not seen any of the work former classmate of mine, Karim Habib, has done. He is now with Kia as a senior director, but we have not seen any of the work he's done, but some concepts from Infiniti indicate they might wipe out their entire product portfolio and do all electric, or, you know, kind of, here's our new concept of what everything is as far as the future. It's more along the lines of Lucid Motors, in my opinion.
Oh, okay. All right.
But they could do that and then kind of create their own brand rather than trying to chase the Germans and keep up. Anyway,
okay.
Merely
I like
thoughts.
That. I like that. It's good stuff. Tristan asked a couple of questions. First off, he said, is there a market for a Hellcat Pacifica? I don't know if there is. We joked about it last time.
I'm going to go with no, but it's cool.
But yeah, I don't think so, but who knows. He said, the rumor for the second generation of the 86 platform, the 86 BRZ, so the Toyota Subaru, is that it might have an engine making about 216, 220 horsepower.
Mm.
Is that enough to make a difference? I'm going to go right back to our experience with the new engine in the MX-5. I don't know if we don't know is what's the personality of that engine. Because what Mazda's basically done with the MX-5 engine is they have given it a minimal bump But it's not a heavy car to begin with. But a minimal bump, it's like 25 horsepower and like 3 pound-feet of torque. Mm. That's nothing on paper.
Mm.
That's somebody had a bad day with bad gas difference running through their Hellcat. That's a no change. But yet, it's got a higher rev band, and the personality engine has more surge throughout the entire rev band. So the engine has a totally different personality with very little on-paper increase. If they can do that, they can solve it. It's not about sheer numbers. It's about engine personality. We'll see what happens.
Blade Silver Grand Sport is going to the Ron Fellows Corvette Owners Driving School in March. What are our suggestions for getting the most out of it or any other driving school? My suggestions to you are put your pride completely aside. Leave it at home. I mean, swallow it, pound it down into the ground if you have never been to a driving school before. If they ask and you say, yes, I've had experience here, here, and here, and they say, oh, okay, well, then you know the basics that we're going to talk about right now, and that is, you know, whatever, corner, entry, and exit, all those kinds of things, the chalk
top. Sure. Yeah, yeah.
But if you haven't been to a driving school ever, leave all your pride at home and come in thinking, I'm here to learn.
Yeah.
You remember when we've read in the news about Tiger Woods and how his golf swing has been deconstructed by his new coach and then completely rebuilt, and he won the Masters again.
Yeah.
And we're like, how did you? Okay. So you unlearned. What struck me most about that was that he unlearned a whole bunch of stuff to then relearn new stuff and then go on to continue to be a champion.
Yeah.
That was always astounding to me.
Weren't you playing okay the first time? Did I miss a meeting?
Was
I don't know anything
about it.
Not
working for you for your 17 other victories that you. Okay. But if you need deconstruction, deconstruct it.
Yeah.
So that's my headspace, is that we can always all learn something from the experts like this. Mm. So deconstruct your golf swing, deconstruct your driving style, leave it behind. And every time, if there's an instructor available, just, hey, would you go with me? And get as much input. One instructor is good. If you like an instructor and they're you know, speaking to you, they're speaking to your style, wonderful. But it does behoove you to get a multitude of different instructions so you can kind of pick and choose. You can say, all right, well, you're fast. I like nothing about your technique, but you're fast.
How
is that possible?
It's interesting to ride with different instructors that may be totally different kinds of drivers. It's always fascinating. Totally
so agree. Just, again, leave your pride aside. Invite the instructors. If there's people standing around and you want to go again or whatever the program is, always pull them into your car and just say, hey, beat on me. Please, you have my permission. Not just, yeah, that's okay, because instructors deal with all kinds of people.
Yeah.
They never know. They can't step on toes. They just have to, you know, be the muse and just, you're doing fine. That was great, because they're getting paid whether you improve or don't.
True. And they kind of assume whoever they climb in a car with, they kind of hold their breath and hope that this person's not dangerous.
Yeah.
And they hope that this person's not assuming they already know everything.
So if you come in and say, all right, I've been driving for years, deconstruct me. Start me at zero and build it back up. Bring me your techniques and everything you've learned. I'm a sponge. Bring it.
That's good.
And then they'll be like, oh, okay, well, this is a real student. They want to learn. Okay, well, let's start with, and then, you know, whatever new cool knowledge comes out of them that they might otherwise have reserved and held back.
Interesting point. I have a last one here. I'm going to end on a track daily crush. I haven't done this in a while. Club Racer 6 says, the $39,000 track daily crush. You see this one?
Yes.
The C7 Corvette. I did. Z51 pack. The 15 or 16 Mustang GT350. And the updated Mazda Miata MX-5, the Indy, the fourth gen we were just driving, the RF.
It's very appropriate. It's a very good question.
It's very good. We have talked up all three of these cars, which is what makes this track daily crush so very compelling and difficult, but I still think I have an answer.
Okay.
Have you thought about this as well?
I have, yeah.
Okay. I actually think the Mustang gets crushed.
Oh.
And here, and you know I like that car, but here's why.
Ooh.
As a daily or as a grand tourer, the C7's phenomenal. I would literally drive cross country in a C7. It once you get it up to like freeway speed, it's got long legs, low RPM, nice cabin. You could just blast across the country in classic GT style. It also is fine to commute in for the same reasons. It's got a surprising amount of trunk space, hatch space, okay? It's a nice place to be. And if the road opens up, if you've got a nice on-ramp, off-ramp, you're having a great time. C7 will be great for all of that. The Indy MX-5 is your track car, because you will only get stuff to learn out of that. You're going to be the guy. We've heard it in many, many meetings. drivers' meetings where they say to the guys that brought the Corvettes to the track, if there's a Miata behind you in your mirror, they're faster. I don't care that you can leave them on the straight.
Exactly.
If you and the guys in the Corvette, I've actually heard this said, two guys in Corvettes, if you and a Corvette have a Miata in your mirror, you need to let him by.
Exactly. There's so much pride involved with that.
Oh, yeah.
So much. That's interesting. I was going to say, drive that Miata every day, all day. Mm-hmm. It's such a fun car to look
forward
to.
It's great for it, for sure, yeah.
And as much as I like that Corvette, I want the power of the Mustang on track. Mm. I want the adrenaline on track. I want the speed. I want the power. I do want that on track.
You're seeing the fundamental difference between you and I right here.
This is great. You know, the Corvette can be, you know, crushed.
Interesting. All right, there you go.
All right, last question for me is a car care question. Alex Mataloni says, how do you keep your car's exterior clean in the winter? Alex lives in Michigan in an apartment, no real access to a water hose and no indoor garage. Mm-hmm. So he finds himself relying on automatic car washes.
As do I, man. Yeah. It's fine.
No,
I'm backing your play.
Doesn't make it okay. Anyway, to rinse the salt off, he feels like this is damaging his paint. It is damaging your paint, but here's the solution. The touchless car washes, the spray only. Now, they don't get all the dirt off. They get most of the muck off.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have the threshold sprayer that sprays vertically up from the ground, just pause over, it's scrubbing your underbelly, so just roll slowly over that.
You go back and forth. I've seen it done.
I kind of do. So once you do that automatic car wash, it's not fully clean. I agree. But then you can take Griot Speed Shine once you get home and wipe the excess off. And once it's clean, because that Speed Shine actually has some protective waxes in it.
It does. It does. It's actually great.
Yeah. The paint's not getting scratched. And then it does get the deep clean that you need while protecting it all through the winter.
Mm.
And then once the weather clears up, then you can really get to hand washing it again. But I recommend this technique. And then the Speed Shine will actually keep it cleaner. You can actually do kind of quick in-between car wash kinds of wipe downs.
It's amazing.
And then, of course, a cover to keep it all nice. I recommend it. Guys, thank you a million for all your questions. I always say it, but you know what? I really mean it.
It's very cool.
It's you guys.
We love all the emails that we get. It's amazing. It's sometimes overwhelming, but it's overwhelming in a great way. It's like reading something that's going to pile that's going to fall on you while you smile. That's kind of what it is.
I guess so.
Yeah, telling you.
Wow. All right. Visual picture. We're really looking forward to next time. Cheers, everyone.